The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
What's going on?
Hey, hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene every week to help you find out what's happening in music, TV, movies, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love on Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. Get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com, and watch us every single week on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash, available in every major city in the U.S. Well, it's a new week, so I am here saying hello to my amazing producer, Matt Menark. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Doreen. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Things are getting chillier now. It's a little colder. We're, you know, approaching the end of October now, so things are starting to change.
Yeah, it's hoodie weather now.
I know. Chunky weather. A chunky sweater weather. I love chunky sweater weather.
I love hoodies. I still
Me
wear
too.
Shorts because my legs don't get as cold, but
yeah,
whatever. A lot of people do it.
I see that. I came from Buffalo, New York. That's where I was born and raised, and it gets over like 40, they're wearing shorts.
Don't they go, isn't that where like people go swimming in the ice? And
they do the polar bear club. They have like that where they do the polar plunge. And yes, they do in Lake Erie. They go out there and they dive into that. And yes, it's cold. Yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine in the nether regions, it probably hits it hard.
I think in all the regions, I think it probably is
definitely.
A little bad. But I think you numb really quickly in something like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to find out. So I'll just take everybody's word for it.
I think I'm good, too. I like just being regular room temperature. We're good that way. Yeah. Yeah. So what's new, Matt?
Just trying to figure out how I'm going to celebrate today, because today's National Food Day.
So all of food, we're just celebrating food in general.
And there's one specific National Bologna Day as well. So if you want to celebrate two holidays at once, just have a bologna sandwich.
I'm confused. So since it's National Food Day and also National Bologna Day, is bologna not considered food? Because you had to have two different categories there. So what is bologna then? I guess I've been kind of asking.
Processed food.
I was going to say, I've been asking that my whole life. You know, what is bologna? I'm not even 100%.
Just like what's a hot dog?
You
probably don't want to know.
Yeah, I think bologna and hot dog are in the same family and the same probably body parts. And
yeah, I was always told it's the ears.
I think it's whatever they don't want to. Anything that won't make it into the actual prime stuff, that's what you get.
It's like the scraps, like when you get the cheap beer,
like Scrapple, too.
Yeah,
right?
Scrapple.
People outside of Philly are never going to know what Scrapple is.
No.
I didn't know before I ever moved to Philly.
You're from Buffalo.
I know. We didn't know what Scrapple is. We have our other, problems over there. But yeah, Scrapple, that's another, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, what other, I heard something about old people UTI day, too.
Yes. Oh, boy. It's National Senior UTI
Speaking
Awareness Day.
Speaking of baloney.
Well.
Yeah, seeking it. Yeah, I don't know how
UTIs
that.
Can be a serious issue.
It is. It is.
But I never knew that they had a specific day.
I did not know there was an awareness for it. But I have, not making light of it. It is kind of funny, but not, not completely. I've heard it's kind of crazy for older people if they do get a UTI. It makes them like nuts. Like you lose your mind. Like I saw, I think it was in Succession. I know, spoiler alert here, but one of the seasons, the main guy, the older guy, he gets a UTI and they think he's losing his mind completely and he doesn't know what he's doing. And it was just a UTI, apparently.
Yeah, it's a bacteria. Infection, I guess. And I think a lot of people think it's just it burns when you pee.
I think it's part of
UTI,
it. That's a little all of
it's
it.
A lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
So I guess today, of all days, you should be aware of it.
You should be aware if your pee is burning. Yeah.
And tomorrow,
don't be so aware if your pee is burning.
Yeah, it's just, you should always be aware.
There's
right?
a commercial, and I won't name names because I'm not throwing shade on any products, but have you seen this commercial where the girl is talking about this product she invented because she got more than, with her partner, whoever, Spencer, she got like over 10 UTIs
yes,
in a year.
I have
and
seen
And I
that.
Said, I would be asking Spencer where he's been.
Yeah.
If that's if you're getting more like 10, 12, 15, 20 UTIs in a year, I'd be looking at my partner. What are you bringing me, dude? Are you cleaning the bologna? Are you cleaning that up before you're,
cleaning the bologna? Oh, National Bologna Day.
It's National Bologna Day. How's that segue?
Yeah. Or maybe you figure out what you're doing before you black out or after you black out on Friday night.
Because I was saying, that's a lot of UTIs. She should be more aware. And this is a day for her. That
even
she
though
needs
she's not
to,
a senior, yes, you should be aware.
I can tell
even
you.
Even if you're younger.
Yes, you should always be aware if your pee is burning.
And drinking water can help.
Yes, and cranberry juice. I'm always good. I drink a lot of Cosmos. I will not get a lot of UTIs because I am a Cosmo queen.
A little more into the Cosmos than
I think
just
the vodka,
cranberry
yeah,
juice.
I think the vodka is killing actually everything, not the cranberry juice.
But. Yeah, I think you're defeating the purpose there, lady.
I'm marinating myself really well. On that note, though, we have an amazing show, and it's not just being marinated. We do. We have a great, like, just kicking show today.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Rolling Stone magazine named my first guest as one of the top 10 drummers of all time, and with good reason. Michael Shreve has written, produced, and played on albums that have sold millions of copies worldwide. As a key member of Santana's lineup during their breakthrough period, Michael rose to prominence as one of the most innovative and influential drummers of all time in rock and Latin music. Take a listen. Yes, 50 plus years later, Michael Shreve has continued to be a respected figure in the music industry, collaborating with artists like the Rolling Stones, Sammy Hagar, Neil Sean, and Steve Winwood. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998, his innovative drumming style helped define Santana's sound. His latest album, Drums of Compassion, has received praise and has been called exquisite and incredible by multiple publications. I'm excited to dig in and learn about Michael's half a century journey in life as well as his many contributions to the music industry. Welcome to The Scene with Doreen, Michael. What's going on?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Feeling good.
Good. How is it out in Seattle right now? You're out in Seattle.
I'm out in Seattle, yep. It's a nice day, a little overcast, but it's finally getting, we're moving into the fall officially.
Yes.
So sweater weather is here.
Yes, we're the same over in Philadelphia. We're starting to see that gloomy kind of sweater weather. Today is a very cold day, but shout out to Kixie, 880 AM in Seattle. Our show plays every week there, and I know that's your home base. So that's pretty cool that we're out there with you.
Yeah, that's very cool. I didn't know.
Yes. And I want to talk about, you know, a lot of times in my interviews, I love to go back. I love to just talk a little biographical about my guests because it's fascinating sometimes what you learn, especially in the early years. And I read that in your early years, you had a very strong desire to become a priest, but you were kicked out of every Catholic school you attended. Is that a good
true
laugh?
Story,
is
that
true?
True story. Yeah. Yeah. My intentions were good.
Yeah.
I mean, I did. I don't know why. There's no explaining why like a boy in grade school would ride his bicycle to 6 a.m. Mass every day. But that was me. And honestly, my parents weren't overtly religious or anything at all. It's a little bit hard to explain, but I think it's kind of the spark that every child has towards something. And I had that. I wanted to be a priest. I wanted to be a missionary. But I guess God had other plans. And so my mission was music, and I traveled and brought that and hopefully brought some joy and peace and happiness to people that way.
Right. Now, why were you getting kicked out of Catholic schools all the time? What were you doing, young man?
Silly stuff. Just really silly stuff that should not have been enough for me to get kicked out. And one of them was untrue. And, I wasn't a bad kid at all. I was a bit of a rascal, but I, You know, anyway, it's not even worth going into.
Honestly, I think that's every young boy. I think every young boy has that spark of just being a rascal. I mean, that was no different than anyone I've ever met.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But so, you did discover your love of drums while you were being kicked out of these various schools. You did discover that early on. And how did that come to be when you just decided that you wanted to play the drums?
Okay. All right. So continuing in the same vein, I'm now at a public school after getting kicked out of grade school, Catholic school. And I'm in a class, and the teacher asked me to leave and go to the principal's office. So obviously I was doing something wrong again. And I was beating on the desk. Maybe I was joking or something. But anyway, they sent me to the principal's office. Boy, I just sound like this kind of kid, don't I? So the principal, you know, scolded me effectively. And on the way back to the room that I was kicked out of, I passed the band room and the door was open and the percussion section was right there. And that was it. I just saw the drums and everything, and it all struck me in a way that told me I'm going to be doing this. So I stuck around there and watched that for a while. Much too long, because I got in trouble again by the time I got back, you know.
There seems to be a pattern.
I went buck drums. Can you see that slowly forming? And it continued in high school as well. So, at any rate, that day I bought drumsticks and I went to the carpet store and got three rug samples and started playing, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the day I started.
Really? You were at a carpet store, and that you, how did you know to do that?
Well, I got drumsticks at a music store, and then I just thought, I can ask for some carpet samples, and they were kind enough to give them to me, and that way I had something to play on.
That's very nice. See, you were already thinking, and it just took one experience, one day, and you were already out and going and doing it.
That was it. That was it. I mean, you know, it's a pretty interesting thing when something like that happens, where you just know, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Everything looked beautiful to me, you know, the shape of the drums, the sound of them. And it just resonated with me so strongly that that's where I went, and the priesthood went out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but I wonder, though, do you feel that the strong sense of spirituality that you had for that desire, wanting to be a priest or missionary, did it influence the way that you approached your musicality at all?
Absolutely. I mean, my latest album is called Drums of Compassion.
Yes.
It's, you know, the title is a combination of an album that was out in 1968 called Drums of Passion by an African percussionist named Olatunji. And on that record was a song called Jingo Loba, which in Santana's first album, we recorded that song, and it was called Jingo. So we electrified that. And here it is, you know, 40 years later, and I'm doing a record that was based off of Drums of Passion, but I called it Drums of Compassion because the Dalai Lama had said, this is what we need now in humankind. We need compassion.
Amen.
So I'm always in that place. I mean, I'm always affected spiritually, you know, outside. I don't have to be in any church anymore because it's everywhere. So, but that, you walk that path, I think, you know. I mean, I haven't thrown everything away, of those sensibilities, but I bring it to the music and hopefully to my life.
Yes. You do have a great talent for blending traditional rock beats with complex polyrhythmic Latin patterns. You grew up in San Francisco in the 50s. Where did that incredible sensibility for Latin music come from?
It's not an incredible sensibility for Latin music. People say that, but I aspired to be a jazz drummer and when I was younger, and I played a lot of R&B. But when I got in Santana, I had not played any Latin music.
Really?
And even when I was in Santana, the rhythms I were playing were based off jazz patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so it melded with the rhythms that they were doing. But I never became some maestro of Latin patterns. It just comes off that way because I'm playing with some great timbali player and percussionists and the band. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it sounds like one thing, But I'm playing another. I'm playing a jazz swing thing with all that Latin stuff, aside from rock beats and things like that.
Right.
But it's a blend of the percussion section.
Yes, you have a little. It's very eclectic. You have a little of everything going on, and you know, 16 years old, everything changed for you in a jam session at the Fillmore West, didn't it?
Yes, it certainly did. I had the nerve to walk up to Michael Bloomfield, who was, you know, the guitar, the English Eric Clapton, and asked if I could sit in, and he let me sit in. I really didn't expect that to happen, but I was there, and I went there with the intention of doing that. So I sat in, and I'll tell you this, I don't even remember it. That's how big a deal it was to me. It's like post-traumatic syndrome.
Out-of-body experience, yes.
Yeah, and so, but backstage, it did happen because the manager of Santana and the bass player of Santana were there, and they talked to me about they're thinking about getting another drummer. This is before they had a record out or anything, but they were very popular in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
I was a fan of theirs as well.
Right.
So they took my number. I never heard from them. But one day I went to a recording studio where I used to frequent to try to get studio time for things that I were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm walking in, the drummer Santana is walking out. Literally, we pass each other in the doorway. Santana Band is recording their first album for Columbia Records, and they had a falling out with their drummer.
Mm.
A couple of those people who saw me at the Fillmore that night remembered me, and then they asked me if I wanted to jam.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that night, the band pulled me in a room and asked me right then and there, do I want to join the band?
Wow. It was an audition. It wasn't just a jam. It was an audition.
Well, nothing was planned. Nobody knew I was going to be there.
Really?
You know? But yes, it was an audition. It just happened by coincidence that I happened to be there at that time. Coincidence, right?
Serendipitous. You say coincidence, yeah. I say serendipitous. And
it's not really coincidence. It's really
divine. I believe in divine. I think there are way too many things that happen, and they can't all be just coincidence. They just can't. So, and just speaking with you today, I don't think that's a coincidence, because I am chatting today with the legendary drummer Michael Shreve, best known for his work with Santana, playing on the band's first 7 albums. When we come back, I chat with the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer about that famous day in August 1969 when his life was changed forever. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Choosing the right insurance company can be complex and confusing. At Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group, we don't just sell you an insurance policy, we sell you a lifetime of peace of mind, service, and satisfaction. A second-generation, family-owned and operated business in South Jersey, we're committed to protecting you and your family. With over 2,000 clients in the tri-state area, we are your local, trusted insurance experts specializing in business, life and health, and personal insurance. Contact Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group today to learn how we can get started on your insurance journey together. Visit www.log-insurance.com or call 856-627-2600.
No more mold. No more damage. No more outdated old bathroom. No more slipping and hurting. No more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Neverclear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
It was the most wonderful experience, the most wonderful education as a young man, as a young drummer. I'm so grateful to have been playing in this band. I'm really grateful and feel honored to be a part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But even more, I want to say that I have been really grateful and honored all my life to have been a part of making music with these guys up here on the stage. I thank you very much.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm chatting with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member Michael Shreve, the very talented drummer, best known for his work with Santana. Coming out of break, you heard an excerpt of Michael accepting the great honor of being inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1998. But I digress. I would be remiss if I did not mention that it is the 55th anniversary of the music festival that not only defined a generation, but an entire industry. You've really, Michael, you've become really known for your electrifying, quote-unquote, drum solo with Santana during the song Soul Sacrifice at Woodstock in 1969. That was right out of the gate for you in your career. But with over 50 years of working on amazing projects with greats like the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger, Sammy Hagar, Steve Winwood, do you ever feel that your incredible body of work is overshadowed by that one performance?
Oh, yes, all the time. I mean, I know it as a fact, and I kept trying to fight it when I was younger. I remember walking down the street in New York City. I think I was about 35 years old, and somebody came up to me who had seen me in South America playing with Santana or somewhere and said, well, you're getting older, you know?
Well, that's sort of what happens in life.
Yeah, dude, wow, I can't believe it. You too.
Yeah, he's older too.
Yeah, and you know, it's Woodstock. Everybody's telling me how much they love Woodstock, and I'm doing all these interesting projects, and I'm trying to tell them about it. Have you heard this? Have you heard this? You know, can we get away from Woodstock sort of thing? And then one day it hit me, Doreen, where I just realized, you know, just shut up. Just accept it and just be grateful that there's something that you've done that moves people that much still.
Yeah.
And so it also, what it meant for me was just do whatever you want. Do whatever you want musically. And my musical tastes are left of center. The people that you're naming that I played with, I did play with, but those are all mainstream. Correct. My musical instincts are not at all, they're instrumental and they're not very commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized whatever the hell you want, because nobody cares.
You know what? That's sort of freeing.
I mean, people care about Woodstock. Yeah, it was sort of liberating. And so, and I mean, after this much time now, people are aware of the other work that I do and everything, but it was kind of liberating just to say, be grateful, just shut up, don't try to sell anything else, and be glad that I made them happy.
Right. Don't they say dance with the one that brung you? I mean, like, they always say that you should just appreciate sometimes. Like, I've had other guests on the show, they don't ever really want to talk about that big first thing, that commercial hit or that big first thing. And like John Anderson, you know, with the big owner of A Lonely Heart. But he's also embraced that. He thinks that, you know, it's wonderful to have something that has resonated. So, you know, it all depends on your outlook. But, you know, you brought up a good point. Yeah. Woodstock. You wanted to be a Catholic priest. So what was that like? I mean, what about a cultural shock to be in an environment like that?
Well, I had been in that environment now for some years, being in the Bay Area. But of course, Woodstock was a whole nother level, a whole nother story, a whole nother gathering of sort of minds and spirit that nobody expected.
Right.
And so, yeah, there, you know, the lineup was incredible. But for us, nobody had heard of us before. We didn't have an album out. And the only people that knew us were sort of people in the Bay Area of California, San Francisco area. So sometimes I forget that when I think about what we did, or somebody sends a video, and, you know, I don't live in the past. But if I look at it, I think, you know, we really won over the crowd. Partly, I think, because we were very tribal musically, and the crowd was very tribal as well. There was a togetherness. There was a sense of belonging that everybody was feeling there at that time, and that they had made it to a sort of mecca. And the thing felt like, everybody felt like, we're really changing things here, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, it was meant to be, but it almost didn't happen. Is it true that Chicago was supposed to play your slot at Woodstock, but thanks to your manager, Bill Graham, and some creative movings around and bookings, they backed out and you took the spot?
I don't know about Chicago. I know that Bill Graham got us on the spot because Michael Lang and the producers of the show soon realized they're over their heads, and Bill was doing Fillmore East and Fillmore West and considered, you know, one of the premier music producers. So they brought him on, but he said, aside from the fee I'm asking for, I want to be able to choose a band or two to play at the show. Mm-hmm. So actually what he did was he gave like four or five bands, like tapes to them to choose from, and they chose us. So that's how we were there. But the thing, you know, the thing that gets me is that we didn't have an album out. And so everybody else had albums out where people knew the songs and we didn't. And so I think that's quite an accomplishment to win the crowd over.
Yes, you know, I would say so. Absolutely. And again, I don't know if it's true or not. You would know you were there. Carlos partook of a few festivities a little too much before his performance, I heard. He just came out and was doing some interviews about that, where he was a mescaline, I think. He was tripping a little bit during the performance.
Yes.
That must have heightened things, though. It probably made things a little better. Obviously, something happened. I don't endorse anything for any of my listeners, but something was working that day.
Yeah. I mean, I was in the same place he was, but it was just Carlos and I. It wasn't the whole group. So, yeah, I mean, it hits everybody in a different way. I mean, he was struggling with it. And for me, I was like in the womb of heaven. I was just joyous and having a good time. So
you guys were so tight. I mean, it was tight. And it's amazing to think that, you know, you were both, you know, on that. And it was such a tight group. People can't do that. When they're lucid 100%, they can't do that. And here you guys are. You were just in the moment. It was beautiful.
We rehearsed every single day. So we were a tight group. It's like another part of my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame speech, Doreen, was I said, once I moved in with these guys, I soon learned that this was no hippie love thing. This was like a street gang, but the weapon was music.
Yeah, I like that. It's perfect. I'm having the pleasure of speaking with Rolling Stone's top 10 drummer and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Michael Shreve. When we come back, we talk about Michael's newest musical project and we wrap it all up. Stick around. We'll be back in a few.
A careless driver can change your life in an instant. Do you know what to do or who to call? If you've been injured in a motor vehicle accident and do not have an attorney, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free consultation. We can answer all of your questions and estimate the potential value of your case. Call Auto Accident Help Desk and connect with an expert personal injury attorney. Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. Don't worry how to handle your medical bills, lost wages, and pain. We will get you the money you deserve.
They got me way more than the insurance company offered.
The consultation is free, and you do not pay any legal fees unless we win or settle your case. Make the smart call. If you've been injured in an auto accident, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free legal consultation.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
No more mold. No more damage. No more outdated old bathroom. No more slipping and hurting. No more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm having the pleasure of chatting with the legendary drummer Michael Shreve. You just heard a short clip of The Breath of Human Kindness off of Michael's newest project, Drums of Compassion, encapsulating over 50 years of musical exploration and collaboration with some of the most revered names in the industry. Michael, first of all, congratulations on releasing the new album, Drums of Compassion. It's a brilliant work, and it really finds this beautiful balance between power, but also tranquility. And I know this has been a passion project for you that has taken decades to finally release.
Yeah, it's an interesting story behind this record. The reason for the record, the way it is, the premise of it, the inspiration was when I come home, I used to go out a lot and listen to music, check out things, and I'd come home and it's 2 a.m. in the morning, and then you want to chill, you want to, you know, before you go to bed, you want to like listen to some music or do some stretching or something that brings you down from, you know, being out in the night. So I thought to myself, what kind of record could I make as a drummer at 2 in the morning that I would want to put on and help me relax? Mm-hmm. And so this is the answer to that.
People don't think of power and tranquility being related, but I've read where you've said that you can't have speed and power when playing without relaxing and breathing.
That's right. Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah, because people forget that. You know, they think of that movie Whiplash, or they think of those, you know, those Hollywood things, and how unrealistic all of that was. And you really are a master at this. And yeah, it's interesting to know the more power you play, the more you need to breathe and relax.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, it's like martial arts, or it's like meditation, or it's like sort of a Zen approach to it. The Whiplash approach is all complete ridiculousness. But, you know, once you get into it, and once you, you know, get older and wiser, you approach it in a different fashion. And it also depends what music means to you on a personal level and what you're trying to get across. And I find that the older I get, the more personal it gets. The feeling, you know, you could say message, but it's not a message, but it's a feeling that you want to put over, that you want to give. Like the last track you were playing, I want it to be just something that people can just relax into completely, like let go with that rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the whole piece is designed in a way so that it's like being in a, you know, going down a river, like a rock skipping down a river, or like a tightly woven boat out of reed that no water gets in, and you're just floating down the river. So I approached it with that kind of imagery, and hope that it manifests in making you feel that way as a listener.
It does. It's very otherworldly. I don't know how to explain it, but it has a spiritual side. And it's interesting that not only is the album cover art a circle, but I found it very interesting that I believe it's weird, or maybe ironic, or maybe just a coincidence. I don't know if we believe in those, like we said, but that your life has gone full circle with this album. You know, we talked in the beginning of the show about your desire to follow this religious path. And over 50 years later, you create this album as a prayer for compassion. And it's just interesting that it's interesting you picked a circle for the album art, and this is your full circle moment.
Yes, I really feel that it is an honest, how do I say it? The music is an honest representation of where I am at this time in my life.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's taken you many years, though, to finally finish it. I know that you've been working on it for maybe 20 years, I think I heard somewhere. So has it evolved?
That's a whole other story. Yes, it had evolved. It had evolved. But I remember asking and I kept, you know, tweaking it and this, that, and the other, which is kind of an artist's way of like chickening out. You know, it's like put it out already, you know, release it, get it off your chest. And so I remember I was talking to someone, and I was just talking about what's the reason why I'm not putting this record out. Is it because of procrastination, or am I afraid? And I came to this conclusion that I really loved it. I really loved this music. And I've put out, you know, 8 other solo records and collaborations, you know, without the pop stuff. And I'm proud of my work, but it's sort of like you put it out there and nobody really, you know, it doesn't make a dent. It moves some people. And I felt a little precious about this one, that it meant so much to me personally that it was enough for me just to make it and hold on to it. rather than it go out and nobody cares. So once I realized that, then I had permission to myself to just finish it up and put it out. And so that was done. But it was a big life lesson as well. Now my new life lesson is don't take 20 years to put a damn record out. So I've got one in the can. I've got a whole bunch of music that I'm getting ready to release. Good. And not all of them in album form, but single form. I'm making visuals to go with it. And so I find it to be a very exciting time. I'm 75 years old now, so I need to step up the pace of releasing music.
So maybe not 20, maybe 10 years this time. We'll half it each time. No, it's interesting when you talk about it, though, because when you talk about it, I envision like it's a child to you. You know, this is your creation. This is something that you conceived. This is something you raised. This is something you taught all your lessons, your life lessons to. And you're kind of scared when your kid goes off to school for the first time. And that's a scary thing. So I understand your hesitancy to maybe want to release it and put it out in the world. And, you know, it's something that's more sacred and special for you. I get it. But I'm so glad you did release it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah, the world needs to hear it. And like you said, it's about a time about compassion and healing in the world and just a different like mind frame of what's been going on. Don't we need a little more of compassion in the world?
Absolutely. And also as a person, as an artist, anybody, what the world needs is not you to do something you did like 50 years ago, or, you know, for you to be what people expect you to be. What the world needs is proof of existence of someone who's gone deep and come back and shared it with you.
Mm. Yes. And not being selfish, sharing that message, that,
yes,
that wisdom.
Selfish.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. There's some that learn things and never want to tell others or impart that wisdom onto others. And it's a beautiful soul that will go and share and relay that message with others.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, I wanted to say that Carlos Santana once said that you were the one that introduced him to jazz greats like Miles Davis and John Coltrane, that you opened up his eyes and ears to an entirely different world of music. And I think it's so much deeper than that. And throughout all of this, and maybe not even a musical person, who was the one that opened your eyes, your ears, and your heart to this entire body of work that you have? Who opened up your heart? Who's the greatest impact that you found in your world?
Oh, you mean like friends growing up or something?
Anyone. If you had to boil it down to one person who really was the one that imparted that wisdom, went to the other side and brought it back for you, who is that person for you?
I would say the person I share most with in a deep musical sense of sharing music is Carlos.
Mm.
It's like we met each other and we both had a thirst and hunger for exploring music outside of what we normally did. Yes, I did turn him on to Miles and Coltrane and some jazz things. Everybody in that band had something that was, Carlos had the blues and beautiful melodic things.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Raleigh had the like English rock and roll vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Carabello brought in like percussion Latin music, like Mongo Santa Maria and all that stuff. Carlos knew that stuff too. And Chipito brought in like his incredible like approach to percussion. So we all shared a lot of stuff, but Carlos and I really went deep with it and shared together. We still do to this day. So
it's beautiful.
We send texts of playlists and stuff like that.
You know? Well, isn't it funny how music, this power, this thing that is just, it transcends time. It just, it bridges gaps. It creates unity. It's something that is just so much deeper. And people don't realize what music really is. And they sometimes in the music industry, they think of it as a product or they think of it as a commercial, something that they can sell. When in reality, real music is something that moves you. That is something that is there that just, like I said, takes you to a different level and bonds you to others that maybe you wouldn't have been bonded with before.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. There's so many effects of music that are absolutely invisible.
Yes. Well said.
In some ways, what I'm working on in my art stuff is that, in the effects of music and sound and vibration put into a visual context.
Mm, I love it. I want everyone to go check out michaelshreve.com. You can pick up the latest album, Drums of Compassion, and keep up to date with what this amazing, talented musician and visionary and soul has in store for us next. And you're just, You're divine. You really are. You're just a delight to talk to. And I think there's so much left in you. I can't wait to see what you have next in store.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for spending a little time with me on The Scene with Doreen today.
Thank you, Doreen.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. I had a good time.
Me too. Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Stick right there, because after the break, we have Paul Zamost of The Effigies in the spotlight. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned.
Choosing the right insurance company can be complex and confusing. At Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group, we don't just sell you an insurance policy. We sell you a lifetime of peace of mind, service, and satisfaction. A second-generation, family-owned and operated business in South Jersey, we're committed to protecting you and your family. With over 2,000 clients in the tri-state area, we are your local, trusted insurance experts specializing in business, life and health, and personal insurance. Contact Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group today to learn how we can get started on your insurance journey together. Visit www.log-insurance.com or call 856-627-2600.
Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene? Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com.
This is radio.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am Doreen Taylor, your tour guide for the hour. I love that we're doing this new segment on the show where we highlight awesome talent and that can shine the much-deserved spotlight on these guests. Today in the spotlight on The Scene is a band that has not only been around for four decades, they have been credited as one of the most influential punk bands of all time. Effigies were the first great band from the Chicago music scene and influenced the sound of bands coming up from the underground like Nirvana. After being formed in 1980 and coming back strong after a 17-year hiatus, Effigies are back with a new studio album, Burned, and a re-release of their classic album, Forever Grounded, in honor of its 40th anniversary. Today on The Scene, I have founding member and bass player Paul Zamost in the spotlight to talk Effigies and more. Welcome, Paul. What's going on?
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure.
A lot happening for us right now, so thanks for having us on.
I love it. And I love that you're a bass player. I've had a lot of amazing bass players on my show. It seems like crazy. I had Leland Sklar, who is a totally different genre. And then we have the up-and-coming bass, Mohini Day. She was just on Kickin' Butt. And now I have you. And I'm really excited to have you on representing.
Thanks for putting me in a category with them.
Oh, no. You put yourself there, buddy.
Okay.
No, but
bass players always have a little different perspective than the other guys.
It's funny because usually bass falls into the background. And I've noticed like they're the part of the rhythm section. They usually don't stand out, but the guests that I have on, no way. They are right out there in the forefront and they are making it almost like a lead. And it's very cool.
Yeah, I've been up front like that, but do a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Well, bass players always have to be the guy that holds it together between the guitar player and the singer. And
It's true. And if you rush the tempo or you drag a little bit, yeah, it can be a train wreck.
Yeah.
You know, I do want to say you brought it up, but congratulations on everything you have going on. I mean, you have a new studio album, Burn, and then you're re-releasing this classic album, Forever Grounded, which was really your foray into the punk scene. And it's 40 years. It's like crazy. 40th anniversary. How does that feel? 40 years.
Oh, it's scary and it's amazing at the same time. It's hard to believe it's been 40 years. And then when you listen to the two records, you won't see that kind of gap in her sound.
Not at all. You know, when you guys started out in 1980, there really wasn't much of a Chicago music scene to play in.
No, not at all. And a lot of people treated punk as a novelty. something that wasn't going to be around for much longer, and slam dancing, and you'd get all kind of people dressing weird to show up to their shows because they didn't know what punk rock was.
Give me an example. What would somebody wear to a show that had no clue what was going on?
Plastic bags. I remember a lot of people putting on like garbage bags.
Really? I wonder that never really caught on, eh? I can't imagine why. Maybe
and
now.
Then after, it's funny because it all started out with people thought you had to dress up for like Halloween to go to a punk show or something. And then it then became that punks were probably the most normal dressed in the 80s. If you look at 80s fashion,
it's from true. That point of view. It's true. I've had a lot of 80s guests on and a lot of the new wave. And yeah, you're right. That was there is a complete difference.
I don't
between
have any
the two.
Embarrassing pictures of me from the 80s. So pretty much the same.
That's cool. You guys have a very loyal base in the underground, but you never really broke through full to the mainstream. 40 years after looking back, why do you think that was now in hindsight?
Well, the market changed a whole bunch. I mean, a lot of bands that became much more popular 10, 15 years after they, actually broke up like us because of the internet. Mm. If it wasn't for the internet, we probably no one would know who we were or ever existed. Mm. So there's always a plus side to the new technology.
Have you embraced it? Do you like the new technology? Because I find some artists that have been around for, 4 or 5 decades, they kind of struggle bringing themselves into that new technology.
Yeah, I embrace it because we have to.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
It gives you an opportunity to get to listeners all around the globe that you never could get to before. So
yeah.
So everything's kind of a trade-off when it comes to the technology. But, we were never a band that was going to be mainstream, I don't think, because our sound wasn't quite, radio friendly for that era.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
not a bad thing.
We probably would have moved to the West Coast. Who's to say? Hindsight's 20/20. And
it may have actually diluted your brand. You would have moved to the West Coast like a lot of artists do, and something changes. Sometimes they make you vanilla, or they smooth you out to make you that radio friendly sound. And then you lose that identity that made you so popular with the underground. You might have lost that core group of people that really fell in love with you and were responsible for you right in the beginning.
Yeah, I never would have had my 3 sons that mean more to me than anything. So,
that's an amazing way to look at it. You're right. That's the best gift out of anything, I believe. I mean, music's kind of like children, but yeah.
I can never have any regret because it would change.
It's true.
We've had many successes outside the band, all of us. But it's glad we're at a place now where I can actually devote myself 100%. Through the effigies, and I haven't been able to do that in a long time.
That's awesome. And I wanted to say, because you sort of touched on it, that there's not a big difference between the two. I played in the beginning, I played the montage where I had 2 tracks, and one was 40 years ago, and one is your brand new album. And I love that you stayed true to your roots and your unique sound. You didn't stray from that.
Yeah, and that was actually, we thrived for that. And, we're guys that we never got to be complacent because we didn't have any hit songs to fall back on. So, we always felt that we're still thriving, like this is our first album. And to many markets, this is our debut. So,
I want to bring this up just because I think it's important for people to realize, because they probably do not know. But while you were making this album, you lost your lead singer in this horrific, tragic bike accident. And you were able to pull yourselves together and finish this project. How were you able to do that?
We had to. I mean, to honor John, this is his best work he's ever done. We made so many sacrifices and time and money put into this record. We had to get it done. And we didn't know where to go with it from then. But, one door closes and another one opens. And we've been lucky to have some new people come in our lives that have, re-energized the band and got us to, get this record out. And these shows with the Black Crowes, of all things.
Right. You're touring with the Black Crowes right now, opening for them in select shows throughout the fall. And what a great way to announce your comeback after a 17-year break. I mean, people take a break and they come back and they play this small little whatever. And you're back opening for the Black Crowes. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool of them to give an obscure band like us this opportunity.
You're not obscure. You are, in the Chicago scene, you have really, so many artists credit you for being the pioneers of that genre. You did things before people knew how to do those things.
And it's funny because we never knew we were doing them when it was happening.
That's why you were good at it, because you didn't realize you were doing it. If you did, that might have changed everything that you were doing. The best things are the one you don't realize that it's even happening.
And the bands today had no idea what it was like to get in a van in 1980 and go, you know, with no communication anywhere. I mean, we drove to gigs 4 hours, 5 hours, just to find out the club got closed the night before because no one could tell us. You know, it's like,
it's true. They don't know what the grind was back then. And, you know, honestly, they weren't even a glimmer in their daddy's eye back then. So it's like they weren't even born for many, many more. So, you know, there is something about toughening up the bands from like the 70s and the 80s and even sometimes the 90s. But yeah, you guys were, and you were out there doing that grind each and every day, and you're back doing that grind now. You're doing these great shows, and like I said, with the Black Crowes, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you would have told us this a year ago, but, you know, so much has happened, and that's, you know, why I try to tell people at my age, you know, don't give up your dreams, keep them alive. You never know what tomorrow is going to bring, and it's been that way the last year.
It's true. And, you know, just to kind of bring it all home, you know, you started out 1980, 40 plus years ago. What's the biggest change that you are seeing now getting back on the road? You know, you have the short hiatus and now you're back. What's the biggest change that you're noticing right now?
Well, the one most obvious to us is the venues. I mean, they're so much better than in the old days.
they're not
as far
sticky.
As loading, yeah. Equipment, the way they run shows today. That's something that the fan can't know, you know, but they're attending places that, I mean, we started out, I called ourselves a dive bar band, and, you know, we played a lot of dives. It's like, the audiences are bigger and more receptive. It's like today you can be punk rock, you can be in a rap, you could be in metal, you could be in all that stuff where, you know, back in the day you were punk, you couldn't be anything else, or metal, you couldn't like anything else.
Right.
We had those kind of stupid attitudes.
It's true. They put you in a box and you were never allowed to even go a little bit outside that box. And now eclectic is great. I mean, I've always been a fan of eclectic music and having a little bit of influence from all different styles of music.
Yeah. I mean, and again, with the internet, I can be turned on to bands in Argentina and Norway and all kinds of stuff.
It's true. And everyone can be turned on to you now, because I want everyone to visit effigies.com to get the new album Burned and to get the 40th anniversary release of Forever Grounded and to check out these tour dates and to just, you also have a really cool merch page. So come, you know, get some cool merchandise on your site. And Effigies founding member, bass player, Paul Zamost, it was so much fun chatting with you on the scene. Okay. This went so fast, and I just wish you all the best with your new album and the remainder of your tour. And please reach out to me again when you have something to promote. I would love to have you back on.
Well, we will be in touch next year when one of our other albums comes out. Was it BFD, the label we're on, is going to release our whole catalog.
Oh, congratulations. That's incredible. Oh, you must come back. Oh, yes, definitely. And maybe we'll have all of you on. We'll get you all into that Zoom window and we'll fit you there. It'll be like the Brady Bunch. You'll all be on the Brady Bunch.
Well, we'll just come into the studio.
Yes, I would love that. You want to visit? We're in Philly. Come on over. You're in Chicago. You're not that far. So come on over. You know.
Actually, we're going to be booking an East Coast tour for spring. So who knows? We could be knocking on your door.
You hit me up and we will have you back on, Paul. It was a pleasure to have you. The Effigies, go effigies.com. And you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Bye. Thank you to my guests today, Paul Zamost of the Effigies, and of course, Michael Shreve. And thank you for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And of course, make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.